Hello and welcome to the Chooseify Radio podcast. Today on the show, we're going to be discussing this past week's episode with Jamila Suffrant from Journey to Launch, talking about her decision to pursue this fully funded lifestyle change even before she officially reached financial independence. And in many ways, it mirrored my own choice. We're going to dive into that. And then we're going to use that as an opportunity to talk a little bit more about what it looks like to continue your journey after you leave your 9-to-5 job. And specifically, we're going to follow up on this idea of how to make money online. I think this is going to be a fascinating conversation. Frankly, it's one that we're doing by popular demand. We got this. We actually started this conversation at episode 69R when we talked about how to start a blog or a website. Listen to that episode first if you haven't listened to it yet, and then follow up with this one as it'll be a great continuation of those ideas. But yeah, really excited to do this, and welcome to the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, Brad. Well, this is going to be a lot of fun. We could spend our entire episode talking about all the actionable content and decisions that Jamila made in this past week's episode. But I thought maybe we could first start by just finding out what's going on with you and your family. I know you guys have had a lot of transition over the last 2 weeks, and hopefully it's kind of coming to an end.
Yeah, it's been a crazy couple of weeks. We just closed, I guess, just about 2 weeks ago on our new house. And the move has been It's been a lot of fun, but it's definitely been backbreaking. I know I mentioned last week, tons of thanks to my family members who came down to help. But we are really at this point like 99% moved in. We've had friends come over and they're like, oh, they expected to see dozens and dozens of boxes still. But we went crazy and unpacked everything. It's basically just like pictures on the wall that we haven't put up. So yeah, definitely 99% moved in. And the cool thing that happened, actually, we just put our old house up for sale. So kind of one of nice benefits, at least in this case of FI, I guess, for me, is that we didn't have this pressing need to sell our original house first and make sure we get everything perfect and ready for showings and all this stuff. We just kind of moved leisurely out of our house and were able to put some finishing touches on the old house and just a little bit of paint and that kind of stuff. Put it up for sale this past Sunday. It was crazy, man. We had 14 showings on one day and we got 7 offers on one day. It was just unbelievable. So we wound up getting actually a price over our asking price, and it seemed like nice qualified buyers. So hopefully nothing should fall through. And yeah, it's really, really exciting for us.
That's amazing that you apparently didn't have this bidding war on the other property, but it happened on yours. That's like the best possible case scenario. That's like when you're driving down the highway and you see the traffic on the left-hand side as you're driving home and you're just kind of laughing your way back to your house. You know, you got away with one.
It really did work out well. I was thinking about that this morning. The delta between this new house and the old house is pretty darn small at this point. It was certainly smaller than we thought it would be. Just because, yeah, you're right. We didn't somehow get in a bidding war for our new house, but yet we got dramatically higher than we anticipated, even more than our quote unquote asking price. Like our asking price was higher than we expected 3 months ago or 2 months ago, whenever we started embarking on this process. So yeah, it really, really worked out well for us financially. But more than that, this was a lifestyle move. This was not a pure FI move because, like I said, this new house costs more money. It just flat out does. So there's no sugarcoating that. There's no hiding it. Not something I'm ashamed of at all. This was a lifestyle move for our family to have more space, to have a space where our girls can feel comfortable bringing friends over as opposed to our other kind of very small house, and where we have friends around and friends that we can invite over and feel comfortable inviting over with, you know, what's a pretty nice, entertaining house. And we've already had a couple of little get-togethers, and our girls have friends over pretty much every day because they live within three or four houses of us. So yeah, I mean, this was a move that we really carefully considered because honestly, it didn't feel comfortable to spend more money for me. That's just not something that I do normally. But Laura and I thought that this would be a good long-term play for our lives. And it certainly seems well on that way.
Well, this kind of sets me up for the rent versus buy conversation that I told you I'm going to hold you accountable on. And specifically, and you know, that is a very difficult conversation because it's incredibly situational. And so while it's very difficult to answer that for all people in all circumstances, I think what you have for us is like the perfect case scenario that we could set up. And basically, the scenario would be that you lived in a house for 13 years and you chose to buy. What would it have looked like if you had rented a comparable house in a comparable neighborhood? And if it had cost less, and in theory, that would be the idea, you'd have less expenses, less property tax, potentially the arbitrage between the rent and the mortgage. You had invested that in an index fund over the last 13 years, that difference. And then when you take into account all of the closing costs and the fees that are associated with transaction, you compare what that 13-year journey would actually look like. And Earn, Big Earn from Early Retirement Now, already has all the tools you would need to be able to generate that, although I have a feeling you will probably need him to coach you through how to input your data. But if you were to take your 13 years worth of data that I know you have and insert that into one of these Excel sheets that he's created, we could, for your specific scenario, find out what the difference would have been for rent versus buy here in Richmond, Virginia, for a, you know, middle class family of four.
Yeah, that will definitely happen. And I know you are staying on top of me to make sure this happens and hold me accountable. And so I bring it back to the audience. And yeah, I can assure you that will definitely happen now that we're kind of everything's smoothed out. And now I have the final selling numbers also, which actually adds a further little positive wrinkle to this. So yeah, I think it'll be useful. And yeah, I will follow up on that.
So are you going to take a nice long vacation and just kind of enjoy being in one place in your new home now?
Yeah, it seems like my life has gotten more complicated lately in the best possible way. We constantly have these camp fives and going on vacations. And this week, actually, I've got this neat trip. It's like this kind of, for me, it's a once in a lifetime trip. I'm actually going to Omaha, Nebraska to see the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting, which is just something I've been looking forward to for years and for whatever reason haven't pulled the trigger on. Our friend Marla and also Pete from Mr. Money Mustache and Carl and Mindy from 1500 Days and I think JD Roth as well will be there. And we're actually like camping in someone's backyard. So I think it's one of the people that Mr. Money Mustache knows through his blog and he offered up his backyard and we're literally going to camp in the backyard. So it should be pretty wild.
Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, here we come. You know, yeah. I got to say real quick that I was not jealous when you announced that you were going to be making this Mecca trip to Omaha, but I kind of am now. I feel a little bit like I'm missing out. I might put it on the list for next year.
Yeah, I think you definitely should. I it's just going to be fun. I mean, there are going to be 40, probably 50,000 people who are all similar spirits, if you will. Like, sure, they're not all into FI, but I bet a heck of a lot of them are of that persuasion, even if they don't know about it. So yeah, I mean, it should just be a really good time. And then to have all those friends there to hang out with. And we also have a Choose a FI meetup on Friday night that the Nebraska local group put together, which is really cool. So I'll get to meet a bunch of our Choose a FI local members in Nebraska. And yeah, I think there's a Mustachian meetup on Saturday. So we're certainly going to get to meet a heck of a lot of people in the FI community, which should be really, really a good time. And not to mention, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger are certainly not getting any younger. So you just never know when it's the last time that they do one of these things together. So I'm just really, really excited for it.
Awesome, man. Well, let's go ahead and hop into this episode. And in particular with Jamila, the idea of failing forward was definitely the most powerful concept that she presented. And it's not something that is totally unfamiliar to me. I mean, I think most of us can think of an idea or a concept that we attempted and maybe it didn't work. Maybe it was an abject failure, right? And I think that there is a real danger for many people to look at failure as, oh, well, that clearly is something that, you know, I should never have tried. I should never have done. And there is like maybe a sense of regret. And I think that is just a missed opportunity. You know, without failure, there cannot be progress. Without making an attempt, there can be no proof of concept. You have to be willing to push yourself, stretch yourself, risk failure in order to find something that actually works. And over again, we saw Jamila being willing to put herself in this situation. And it's an incredibly, incredibly inspiring message, especially when you realize that it's not a one-off thing. It's rather, it's a way of life.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not failing at something in life, you're probably not trying difficult enough things. I mean, that is what it comes down to me. And this comes down to the whole telling your kids they're smart versus telling them to work hard. There's a lot of study on this, especially I think it's Angela Duckworth and her book Grit and the fixed mindset versus growth mindset from Carol Dweck. I mean, there's a ton of research on this about you need to push your kids and yourself, frankly, to work hard and not think that you're some fixed trait, right? You're not smart. You're not good at X and bad at Y. It's okay, if I work hard enough and I try to learn, I can do anything or at least try, right? And try to succeed. And like you said, you fail forward. Everybody fails. You have to fail. I failed, like we talked about on the episode on Monday, I failed with multiple online businesses. But I don't look back at those and say, wow, I shouldn't have tried. That was a waste of my time. That's the exact opposite. It's that would be like resulting, as Annie Duke from the book Thinking in Bets calls it, which is just looking at the result and not considering the process or what the odds were going into it. It's silly to look just at the result. You need to look at, was this worthwhile? Did I learn things? Where can I go from here? Who have I met in this process? What relationships have I built, right? These are the things that are important for future success. And I can tell you for certain, I would not have this podcast, I would not have my other websites being successes today if it weren't for those failures and for failing forward, as we call it. So yeah, Jonathan, as you mentioned, that's definitely something to add to the Choose It By lexicon for sure.
I need to create a page with lexicon with a bunch of links to podcasts where these ideas were introduced.
How many can you think of? I was trying to brainstorm, and obviously the alley will provide from Paige and Sam is at or near the top, right?
Yeah.
The accumulation of marginal gains.
It's Barney.
From the escape artist. Yeah. What is it? The magic money making machine from Joel from Phi 180. Is that what he called it?
Yeah. Yeah. And we've kind of alternated between that and perpetual money making machine, yeah, but both are super, super solid. There's a few others too, like Cody in our Facebook group, he coined a firewalker. Which was, you know, that's obviously become anyone on the path. That's what you are, firewalker. And me personally, the fire is spreading. That was a Jonathan original right there. I'll take credit for that. Second generation fire. Yep, absolutely. Second generation fire was spawned on this show. And also fully funded lifestyle change. That was from Slowly Sipping Coffee. That's something we're going to be talking about today, but that's another one. I mean, there's all sorts of things. You kind of create a language that helps you frame these ideas in place and kind of gives you a common verbiage to interact with other people and just kind of help you identify where you are on this path. I don't know. It's fun. It makes you feel like you're inside. You've got inside access to the secret language, and it just becomes very familiar after a period of time. But I think it has been very fun to think about how these things have kind of sprung up organically over time.
Can you think of any instances in your life where you've, quote, failed forward? Does anything jump to mind?
Let's see. When I was in high school or just after high school, I was the one that had the video camera with my friends and we're trying to create projects and that sort of thing. And it was horrible and nothing ever got produced. The technology wasn't there. I wasn't creative enough. You know, I just didn't understand how to bring all these ideas together. I would say it was a failure, but it didn't cost me anything. But I'm utilizing all those tools and all those creativity now in a time where it's way easier to actually produce this type of content. So that would be a specific example. I can think of tons of times where I tried to attempt a diet or an exercise routine and it failed, quote unquote, or I didn't quite get the results that I wanted to get, but I learned something about myself. I learned something that didn't work. I learned, you know, a way that when I break a diet or an exercise routine, you know, what those common patterns were, and it gave me strength and resolve when I pursued it the next time. I'm trying to think if there was another one. I guess I can look at times where I wasn't the best dad. I wasn't the best father. I wasn't the most present son. And I can look at those specific circumstances and say, what caused that failure of communication? What caused that meltdown, that argument, that fight? How did, you know, what role did I have in that failure to communicate? You know, you learn from that, you fail forward again. So I that's just a couple examples. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah. So I was trying to think of my own past and choose FI and how failing forward has really helped. And yeah, I mean, I hate to beat a dead horse because I know I've mentioned this probably 5 or 10 times over the, I guess, the 100+ episodes. So maybe it's not too bad. But I mean, all these online businesses that I had, I mean, Jonathan, you would not believe some of the wacky things that I did. I mean, I think I've told you in the past, I had a drop shipping business for firewood storage racks. I literally have never lit a fire in my entire life, but yet I'm selling $400 firewood storage racks on a website and somebody's coming to the site and paying me money. But that failed because we screwed up with Google. And that was something that I learned to not be inauthentic. That was something, a huge, huge thing that I picked up. I had other sites that I thought they were great content ideas and that I could really produce high quality stuff. And I realized, okay, I don't love writing content. Like that was actually something that those things failed just because of me, because that was not something that worked for my life. Whereas with these podcasts, I could do these every single day. So like this is, and don't worry, we're not jumping. I know you're having a heart attack there.
We've had multiple people ask us to do a daily show and I'm like, nope, just let's end this conversation.
That will never, ever happen. As much as we love it, there's no conceivable way. But I've realized this is even more than talking about this in real life. There's something about this medium and talking about this kind of stuff on the podcast that this is just like the way that I like to express myself. So I learned from that. I learned from not building relationships with those first couple of sites to, okay, this is how you get ahead in life, right? So all these things we brought into ChooseFI, and not to say that we haven't had any missteps with ChooseFI, but really it's been this amazing upward trajectory. And a lot of it comes down to these lessons that we've picked up from the past and from the past 5 or 6 years, and really more than that, since I initially started these random sites, probably almost 10 years at this point, of just lesson after lesson, hour after hour of what many people would consider wasted because they didn't have any tangible positive results, but they showed up 10 years later. And that's, to me, that is the essence of this failing forward. So I guess you kind of wanted to talk about monetization and tie it into Jamila. So I think that would be a valuable discussion, certainly in light of the how to start a blog thing that we did a couple of weeks ago. So yeah, I'd love to hear where you're going with that.
Okay, so I thought the setup for this absolutely could be the fact that Jamila, similar to me, is making the decision to pursue a fully funded lifestyle change. Basically, she has a platform, it has some traction at this point, and she has laid this financial ground game. So they, while they are not at FI, if she were just to continue on this path, she will be at FI very likely within the next 5 to 7 years. But for her life, she doesn't feel like pursuing the side hustle journey to launch and her life are like, and her current job or current 9 to 5 with that hour long commute, she doesn't feel like that is going to be sustainable. So she has decided to design the future that she wants to live into and make that choice now. Now I'm going to go ahead and say that this particular, the rest of this episode is not really targeted at Jamila. She understands very well, I would imagine at this point, what your different options are for making money online. But we got a lot of feedback from people after they listened to episode 69R saying to us, thank you so much for the episode. Very helpful, but you stopped a little bit too soon. I'm trying to figure out the monetization piece. And specifically, Brad, in that episode, you said that you were talking to Laura and you were talking back and forth, and you said that you couldn't think of anybody that had been blogging consistently for 6 years that hadn't achieved some level of financial success. So that was, you know, that was thrown out there. Of course, you're going to get some sort of feedback on that, right?
I'm sure I was proven wrong almost instantly, but yeah.
Well, I found out about this from a backlink. Someone linked to that exact episode. And this is from, I'm going to link to this in the show notes, but it's from hilariouslizzie.blogspot.com. And a link to the actual article will be in there. She said, I had the privilege last fall of teaching a Financial Peace University class with my brother and his wife as students. As a result of paying off their student loan debt and being ridiculously excited for the future, they started listening to a podcast called Choose FI. The FI stands for Financial Independence. My brother sent me their way, and I listened to an awesome podcast about building a blog into a business. I was inspired. I briefly envisioned quitting teaching when my incredibly viral, popular blog spawned me thousands in monthly affiliate and advertising revenue. I'd land a book deal. They literally said the line in this podcast, "I can't think of anyone who has been blogging regularly for 6 years or so, not finding some success." Well, she said, "Hey, I've been blogging for 6 years. It's me. It's me. It's me." So basically from there, she wrote a little bit further and she said, "I want to take a look at this blog that I've had for a fairly long period of time now and figure out what I can do. Am I serious about this? Is this something that I do want to turn into a business? Is that my intent? And if so, I'm going to be trying to be intentional about what decisions I made." And so I thought that we could today take the remainder of the episode and talk about the 6 or 7 ways and maybe a bonus way to make money online. And I know you have a lot to add to this, but what I thought we could do is I will set up the one way. I'll set up the way to do it. And then you think about what you can add to this content, maybe come up with examples from different people that are using this type of monetization program, but we could explore all of your different options and then kind of summarize at the end. What do you think?
Cool. Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me.
Okay, let's go ahead and start with this. This will be the 7 ways to make money online, plus a possible bonus. Number one, membership site. A membership site basically is you have created a site with content that has significant value, and you charge people a fee to be a member of that site. Now, there are a few different ways to do that. You can structure it so everybody can get access to it. Some portion of it is free, and then you give them additional content that you charge for it. But this is definitely a model that has a proven track record. And there are a lot of businesses that have used this extremely successfully. In my mind, probably, and this is my own bias in the space that we're in, BiggerPockets is by far the best at this. They have over a million members in that community. And I don't know what percentage of those are paying, but 1 million members in that community.
Wow. That is a crazy, crazy number. Obviously, they are one of the most successful sites, certainly in our sphere and maybe all of the internet. So that is a very good example. I know friends of mine are Shane and Jocelyn Sams from flippedlifestyle.com. Anybody who's a Pat Flynn listener probably remembers them. They were on, I think it was his most downloaded episode of all time, actually. And they have a membership group on basically building businesses. So building online businesses. And yeah, they're really, really cool, wonderful people. So that's one that jumps to mind for me. Jonathan, any others that you can think of offhand?
Well, I think Dad Edge is one that you've kind of been a part of that community for a while. But I think the key here is, you know, we can come up with additional examples, but why is it that they can charge a fee for this service? It's because they're adding value to their members. And so if this were the model that you were going to follow, you would need to think about specifically, like, what specific value can you add to this community? How can you improve someone's life? It goes back to one of the things that we talked about, the difference between a successful blog from one that hasn't gotten this traction is the ability to solve a problem. And for these different sites, for BiggerPockets, you are connecting people with resources, with knowledgeable minds, with a friendly community, with someone that can keep you motivated. And a lot of times you see this almost this hybrid of a mastermind group getting built into the service where, yes, you have this membership site with these different resources. And the key there is always that you're solving a problem. Whatever that your particular niche is, you are solving a problem for that community.
Yeah. And the part that always was difficult for me to imagine for creating this myself, but many of these people have figured out who actually have these successful membership groups, are really providing value on a monthly basis that can warrant that fee, right? Because people are paying every single month. So you can see why it's a very elegant business model from the site owner's perspective, is that people, you're charging their credit card probably the first of the month, every single month. I mean, that's pretty cool to have recurring revenue. So yeah, I mean, if we're talking about monetization, you can understand the allure of that, but you have to bring it, right? You need to bring value that keeps people there, that keeps them not canceling basically every single month. I know Shane and Jocelyn, they have monthly, or it might even be bi-monthly, membership calls that it's just Q&A with the audience. They are active in their online group that's behind that paywall. So they answer questions in the forum, and they also provide significant ongoing resources like videos that they create and courses. So there's definitely a lot of value that you can provide. But as the site owner, you obviously need to produce that. You need to be there every single month. This is not a one and done, hey, I created an affiliate marketing course and now I just have to get people to buy it. No, I mean, this is something you need to update every single month. So when you're considering monetization and your different options, there's certainly pluses to this, like that recurring revenue, which is amazing. But you do have to be there and you need to provide value every single month.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But just to put it in perspective, though, if you end up in a situation, just grow this out, where you are able to add value to 1,000 individuals and you're charging even something nominal like a $10 a month, you have now created a site that's generating $10,000 a month in revenue. It's incredibly simple math, but just for the sake of kind of showing you what this would look like practically, you can scale that up or down, but it is a very viable model. The other half of this, and you're going to see very quickly that there's a lot of overlap. You don't have to choose. You may have to start with something, but you don't have to just be one of these. The next one is offering a digital course. And I wanted to do this one next because it goes so well with the idea of a membership site. The digital courses you could either include in your membership site, or you don't even need to have a membership site. Many people are very good at a particular skill set. They then package this as an online video series, a text series, a webinar, whatever it may be, and they sell that. And so you create it once. You may have to put hundreds of hours into creating it, but once you've created it, it's there for perpetuity, and you market that at an individual price, you know, $49, $99, whatever it may be. There are platforms that will take care of the exposure for you. So platforms like Udemy is one of those where once you've made the course, you can publish it there and they take care of the exposure and they're taking a percentage of the profits. Or you could create your own website and you're publishing this course as well. But the reason I wanted to mention this and tie it back to what Brad was talking about is this idea of a hybrid. You have created these courses. They're behind a paywall, a membership site. But for those members, the courses are there for free. Inside of this group, you could also do a mastermind group. This is what Brad was talking about with the individual touch. So yes, you have these digital services that will last for perpetuity that don't require you to get intimately involved, but you also hop on a call, or you have people on your team that hop on a call. This is incredibly effective for things that involve any sort of group work. So you see different meditation groups using this, health and fitness groups that are relying on that motivational aspect, almost that CrossFit-like aspect to get those results. Anything that is results driven can benefit from this type of mastermind model. Masterminds are kind of this hybrid where you may have a service that's being, or a course that's being attached to it, but it kind of models that membership site model.
Yeah. And we've seen a bunch of our guests be extraordinarily successful with these type of online courses, right? I know Bobby from Millennial Money Man, I think he made what, Jonathan, over $100,000 in a month, like after we interviewed him.
And yeah, because we interviewed him, he made $100,000 a month.
No, but good point. No, I wasn't saying that in any way, shape, or form. But yeah, I mean, that course that he put together, like you said, he spent probably hundreds of hours creating it, but now it exists and he just has to market it. And obviously, Michelle from Making Sense of Sense is a perfect example. Chad from Coach Carson has a really good real estate course that you and I are both involved in taking there. And I mean, there are lots of examples just in our own community of people who are seeing some real success from creating these courses and selling them. And then you could also contrast that with something like my Travel Miles 101 course, which is basically a similar concept, but it's actually free. So that's something that we make money on the back end with affiliate links. And we just decided that was the option we wanted to take. So there are definitely different ways to approach creating a course, but I think the vast majority of people who create courses actually sell them.
And once you move past courses, something that's kind of related to that, this will be the third option, would be to create a physical or digital product or service. So think you actually create a business, or you write a book, or you create a plugin for WordPress, or whatever your particular skill is or skill set is, you're still essentially solving a problem. And this is one that actually transcends being specifically an internet business. And this is why I was making the case that every single business going into the future, whether or not you are a plumber, electrician, handyman, painter, the ones that figure out the website, the ones that figure out how to scale past their zip code, past the people in their neighborhood, and past just the simple word of mouth, will be the ones that get 10x their results. This is just a necessary part of that. So creating a brand around your idea is so much more potent when you can leverage the internet. And so it's this additional way of thinking about it. But obviously, if you have an attractive brand presence on the internet, you have an attractive, easy to engage website with scheduling, with price listing, with a way to communicate with the people that have benefited from it, and giving them an easy way to share that they've used you, maybe on Facebook or another social media platform, you are going to get way more growth than the individual that isn't thinking about this. This is what you call that competitive edge. So that is just kind of the way I wanted to frame that third option. It's either marketing your business, which you already have existing, or selling a digital product or a physical product or service.
Yeah, and that social proof that you're talking about is really important. I think with any of these, when people, especially when people are coming to your site and you're asking them to put in their credit card number or their PayPal and pay you money, having some type of social proof really does go a long way. So I think that's kind of an important background for this. And just kind of a random aside on actually physical products, these don't necessarily need to be things that you've manufactured yourself. While that's certainly part of it. I mean, I know people who are sourcing products that they put in the schematic and created, and they're sourcing it from China and having them shipped over here and sold. I mean, that's one extreme. Or you can just do the drop shipping model, which is what I did with those firewood storage racks that I talked about a few minutes ago.
Other people have had more success than you.
They certainly have. And I mean, that was in the 4-hour work week. I think that's where many of us know about drop shipping, which is basically you're just creating the website and you have a relationship with the manufacturer in most cases, or sometimes a wholesaler if there are enough margins to make it worthwhile. But essentially, you're never taking ownership of that product. You're never seeing it. You're not wrapping it up and going to UPS and sending it off. Basically, all I did when someone came to my dopey firewood storage rack site was they put in their credit card. Money was deposited in my bank account. I forwarded that email receipt that I got to the manufacturer. They shipped it off and they charged my credit card, and I basically netted the difference. So, I mean, talk about an amazing, amazing business model. I mean, it's really, truly remarkable. You're just, in my case, just forwarding one email and making upwards of a 20% profit margin. So that is a really, really cool business model. But of course, you need to create the website and have it appear in Google searches. You need to, like I said, with social proof, make it so that people actually want to buy from your site. And you need to establish those relationships with the manufacturer. So long story short, that is kind of a cool business model with really no downside. So there are lots of different options around these physical products or services. So that was a cool bullet point for sure, Jonathan.
All right, now number four, let's go ahead and talk about advertising. Honestly, this might be the easiest out of all of them. It is not very profitable on day one because it's dependent on your traffic, as a lot of these are, but this one is very, very attached to your traffic levels. But advertising, almost on day one, you can get into the Google AdSense program, and they will basically put a banner ad somewhere on your site. You basically specify where it is, and you will get paid a very, very small fractional amount per page view, or I think you get a increased percentage based on a click. This is why if you have a site that gets millions of page views a month, of which I know several, this can be serious money. It's not necessarily going to be the only way that you monetize. In fact, once you're getting millions and millions of page views a month, if you ever get to that point, I promise you will have plenty of other opportunities, but it is one of the easiest ways to start with monetization. And so to give you a couple examples, Google AdSense is one. Once you have a slightly larger brand, you have more traffic that is consistently coming to your website. There's others that pay out even better, like Mediavine. They also give you slightly more targeted advertising. So I don't know, Google AdSense can really bit some weird stuff off that you'll see in the bottom of those ads, which can make them somewhat uncomfortable sometimes. But depending on, you know, what your brand is and what you're trying to market, that is a super low hanging fruit way of making some money on almost day one. And then number five. So now we've moved out of advertising specifically into sponsorship or sponsored posts. So depending on whether or not we're talking about a podcast or a blog, this could be different. But basically, at some point, you will have somebody coming to you asking you whether or not they can sponsor a post talking about their specific product. And there is an implied intimacy. You know, this episode brought to you by, this blog article is brought to you by, So like if you, I'm a huge fan of America's Test Kitchen. It's brought to you by Kohler. You know, Dave Ramsey's show might be brought to you by Xander. Tim Ferriss brought to you by MeUndies.
Man, they do sound comfortable. Can I get a token laugh, Brad?
You cannot. Yeah, he certainly had a bunch of those commercials. So yeah, I heard a lot about MeUndies and I think almost bought a couple of pairs at one point.
All right. But that's the idea of sponsorship. So this can work for you relatively early on. But when you do a sponsorship, I am assuming that Tim Ferriss owns massive amounts of these MeUndies and that he would recommend them to anyone. It's the same thing. When you do a sponsored post, there is this intimacy between you and that sponsorship. That is amazing if you love the company. Not so good if you are a personal finance show doing a sponsored post from a payday lender. Maybe not going to be a good fit.
Yeah. And like you said, a lot of this does come down to trust and that intimacy. It might be slightly different on podcasts because you're hearing our voices and we're talking about whatever this sponsor is. And obviously you and I are not doing that. We've made the decision not to put these sponsorships on our actual podcast. But many people that I know and trust, they have these sponsorships and these commercials. And yeah, I mean, there is that implied intimacy. There is this implied trust that, hey, this is something that either A, I use, or B, I believe in enough to talk about it. That might be unfair in some cases, but that's the way that I approach it is that, yeah, I mean, if it's good enough for them to talk about for a minute or two, that they've done their due diligence and that they're putting a little bit of their reputation into this, right, to their entire audience. So I think that's really important. I've seen a lot of sponsored posts. To me, those are always a little bit closer to that gray ethical line. That might be unfair also because it really does come down to the blogger and what they want to put on their site, how comfortable they feel, what type of oversight they have in these actual posts. Are they writing it? Are they getting paid for this review, whether they like the product or don't like it? Is there that kind of implicit, hey, you're paying me, I need to say really good things about it? Well, I mean, that kind of comes through to the audience that this is kind of a sham, right? So I am more impressed when, sure, they might talk about all the good things, but you really do need to highlight some of the negative things, right? So I think you always have to keep your audience in mind. I think that to me is the crucial part when it comes to these sponsored posts or sponsorships on podcasts. And yeah, just be intellectually honest and know that, sure, a couple bucks in your pocket or a couple hundred or a couple thousand bucks in your pocket might be nice, but it's not worth alienating your audience and having them think that you're doing this for the wrong reasons, because that stuff comes through. It really, really does.
And you know who does a great job at highlighting both the pros and the cons and just being upfront about it is actually Robert from The College Investor. And I've actually seen reviews that he's put on his site where, yes, he talks about what he likes about it, but he also goes into what he does not like about it. And I think that if you're looking for an example of what it looks like to do a really good, essentially sponsored post with both the pros and the cons, that would be someone that I would highlight as doing it right. All right, let's go ahead and talk about number six. This is going to be listener supported or reader supported. This is a model that has been around forever, and you see it on a lot of charitable organizations. It basically just, if you're enjoying, if you're getting benefit, or if you want to have an impact, just to make a donation. And it's a very viable model for people that are essentially giving away all this information for free on the internet as well. You just are asking your audience, hey, if you're getting value from the content we're putting together, it'd be incredibly helpful if you would consider supporting us. And there are some additional benefits and features like maybe calls or extra content that you could provide depending on the level of donation. You can do some sort of tiered setup where maybe you let them suggest a topic to write about or suggest a future guest. There's all sorts of additional ways that you can add value, but this is a model that actually a lot of people use very successfully. There are some online services that make it very easy for your listeners or readers to make these donations. Patreon is probably the biggest one. Basically, it's a service that you sign up for, but it basically creates a platform for you that somebody can commit a certain dollar amount per month. I'm sure there's different ways to do it in different tiers, but it makes it extremely easy. I know that Radical Personal Finance uses this Patreon platform. The Minimalist uses this Patreon platform, and there are many others. In the blogging space, I know that Wait But Why why an incredibly popular blog uses this platform. They're producing regular content. And to put this in perspective, they have over 600,000 people on their email list. Imagine what that means just at an economic scale if even 5 to 10% of those are donating $5, $10, $20 a month to that platform, more than enough to feed your family. So I think the amazing thing about blogs in general is that there is very, very little overhead. You're creating this from your living room. You're creating this from your basement. You don't need to have a building that you're paying rent for and a massive team of 20 people. I mean, I'm not saying you couldn't, but practically speaking, once you're creating the content and packaging it, there's not much cost other than just maintaining your website. And so whatever is being donated at that point is, you know, that's your revenue. That's profit. That's allowing you to feed your family. And so it's just, I guess my point is, when you have like this fixed business that you've built that has like a team of 20 or 30 people and you have rent that you have to pay, I know in my industry, you had to like make close to $100,000 in revenue before at that point you were even moving over from meeting your expenses to profit. And that's per month. It's just not as difficult when you're starting this lightweight, lean business. It doesn't take as much to feed your family. I think that's just a really cool realization to have how low risk having a website or this online platform really is. I thought we could land on number 7, which is where we have spent a lot of our time, and that is affiliate marketing. Affiliate marketing basically is, instead of someone paying you directly to talk about their product, instead you set up an affiliate link. And if someone signs up or clicks on that link and signs up for the service, you will get some sort of commission from the company. The consumer is not charged anything extra, but basically you are referring a product. And if someone chooses to click your link, the company will pay you some small stipend for that referral. And this is kind of the place that we've been the most comfortable landing. We kind of have talked about this in the past, this idea of these win-win relationships. There are so many, way too many to cover, opportunities for affiliates that are out there, but that's the basic model that it works off of. And some affiliate programs are more difficult to get into than others, and you may not be able to start with that one you absolutely want to get into. I think probably the easiest one to get into, and the one that everybody should start with, is Amazon. It's ubiquitous. It's also not incredibly profitable for everybody, but it's a great place to start. And we do participate in this. It basically pays out based on the category. And so it kind of depends on exactly what type of product it is, but it'll make anywhere from 0 to 8% of that particular sale. What's interesting about this is once you make your first dollar online, you become encouraged that it's possible and you realize that there are more ways to do this. So like, for instance, we have links to a lot of the books that we mention on the show in our episodes, and we make maybe a few cents, maybe even up to a dollar if someone purchases a book through one of those links. Not exactly changing the world with this, but I tell you what, making a dollar when you were making nothing the day before suddenly opens up doors that you didn't even realize were absolutely possible. And then from there, it's like, okay, I understand how this works. What would it look like to be better at this? And I will say that just because at Chooseify, we make very little on Amazon affiliates, other people are crushing it. And what you have to look at is how do those categories work? Like someone that is doing all sorts of reviews on camera equipment, or I guess a more applicable one would be podcast equipment, or maybe expensive, really big expensive items like pool equipment. I know someone that's making $30,000 a month from different products that you would get that are related to hot tubs and pools. I mean, this is definitely out there. Someone that is telling people all the latest about camera equipment and has a massive audience and is talking about the latest reviews is potentially making tens of thousands of dollars a month on Amazon. From there, once you get outside of Amazon, there are specific programs that you can apply to, and you can find those at maybe a conference like FinCon. If you've never been at one of those before, highly recommend it. You can go to different hubs. There's like 3 or 4, like CJ Offers, Flex Offers, Has Offers. There's all sorts of these hubs that have tons of different affiliates in them, and you can apply for those individually. And then the crazy thing is, the really cool thing is, you can actually, in many cases, create your own affiliate programs. You know, as you create your brand presence and you find something that you're incredibly passionate about and you want to talk about it, you can many times go to the individual that has the product or service and ask them whether or not there's some way that you could participate in an affiliate capacity. And I can think of examples where that has worked as well. So this is just kind of our approach to monetization in general and kind of how we ended up making a selection. The cool thing is, like, you really do not have to choose. You can start with one and then you can layer that as you get a little bit more complex and you can start to build a portfolio. The key here, though, is initially you don't start with monetization. You start with purpose.
Yeah. And Jonathan, I think it's about finding that problem and finding that community and adding value. For us, we talk about travel rewards quite often, not because we want to make money from it, but because this is a problem in our lives, right? You and I love to travel. We have families. It's expensive. And we've found a way to cut some of the costs from that. So we talk about that because it's an important part of our lives. And because we've established an affiliate relationship, and if people click through our link, which, as we've said over and over again, is just chooseify.com/cards. If people sign up for a credit card, we make an affiliate commission from that. To me, like, that is a win-win all around. So I have no issue whatsoever with that type of marketing. And this is why we have really locked in personally on affiliate marketing. Whereas for me, the sponsorships, that just doesn't work for what I want to get across with this podcast. I listen to other podcasts and I would never put down another host. Obviously, you need to make money and have the show that you want. But there are podcasts that I listen to that have three separate commercial breaks into their show, right? The beginning, the middle, and the end. And it just splits the show up for me. And I just don't really enjoy that as a listener, because that's how I'm always thinking. I'm always thinking of myself as, whether it's the Choose a Vi show or some of the other podcasts that I listen to, as a member of that community and as a listener, and what is the product that I want to hear? So then putting on my podcaster's cap and looking at Choose a Vi, those sponsorships, those are just not something that I want to go after, because I think it really reduces the value of the actual product that we're putting out. So to me, affiliate marketing is the obvious win-win all around. So we only talk about products that we are passionate about and that we, at this point, that we use personally, right? So when we talk about personal capital and send people to our link, you know, /PC, like, that's because you and I use that. I have no issue with that. To me, that is a perfectly logical way. If people want to support us, they can type in or click our links. And if they don't, just go to personalcapital.com and sign up anyway. We're happy to talk about it because we think it adds value. So yeah, I mean, I think to me, that's why affiliate marketing is the obvious way forward, because it's something that I can be happy with intellectually and that I can sleep well at night knowing that I'm adding value to my audience and my community. And if I make a couple bucks from those links, then that's all the better, in my opinion.
So going back to Lizzie's blog specifically, and she's wondering, what is my purpose? I think that is the key. Like, when someone is finding out about your story, you're not just journaling your day-to-day at this point. You're talking about it from building a business perspective. Why should someone interact directly with your content? What problem are you trying to solve? And all of us have problems that we're trying to solve in our daily lives. And if we don't, that's a problem. You should probably, if your story is nothing is going on in my life, that is a problem. Let's solve that. All right. You could probably create a hook around that, a niche around that. You could find other people that feel like they're drifting and are looking for purpose. You can build an idea or a brand around this. And so once you kind of understand that concept, you understand that I need to solve a problem. Maybe that problem is that I'm having trouble losing weight. Maybe that problem is that I'm drifting through life. Maybe that problem is that I have no ideas and I want to start a business. Or I have a business and I want to show people how I built the business. Or I have this skill set and I want to share with people what I'm doing. Or I love being outdoors and I want to journal my family's journey from sitting in front of the television from 12 hours a day to living life around the globe. Whatever it is, whatever your story is, figure out what is it about it that makes it different from the norm. And then figure out, how do I market this? How do I find other people and share with them this story that I'm building and get them to engage with me in the process of this community? And along the way, there will be things that you find that are useful on this journey. There will be things and ideas. There will be products very likely that will help you with this. So for instance, you're interested in gardening and you decide that you want to get a composter. How did you select the composter? Is there a link to Amazon for the composter that you got? That sort of thing. It's a very simple process. At some point, you will have something that you can rave about. And when that happens, you can now at least talk about affiliate marketing if you decided to go with that one. All right, so at the beginning, I teased that I did have a bonus way. It was 7 ways to make money online plus a bonus. Here is the bonus. If you remember back in episode 69R, How to Start a Blog, I talked about the importance of picking a solid brand name. And I gave you all of my thoughts on exactly how to go about selecting that brand name. Well, here's the cool thing. All along the way of this journey, from inception through the years, as you start to figure all these little things out, you are building your brand. Your brand is why it's so important to be careful with which method of monetization that you use. In this business that you're getting into, trust is everything. It really is. That is the underpinnings of this entire process. And if you lose that trust and your brand is tarnished as a result of it, it is incredibly near impossible to gain back. And so as your brand grows, you just find that opportunities present themselves to you that you never could have dreamed and aren't covered by any of these 7 prior mentioned ways to monetize your website. Partnerships avail themselves to you. Different startups avail themselves. All these things start coming directly to you. And so the 7th way to monetize your business is just simply grow your brand and watch what the universe opens up to you.
Yeah, that's a cool one, Jonathan. And I agree. It seems like when you have a community, when you're authentic, when you're not spammy, right? When you're all these good things, that opportunities just seem to come to you. It's a nice position to be in, obviously, to be able to sift through different opportunities and really call down and find the ones that add value to your life and to your communities, most importantly. So yeah, I mean, that's a neat one. It's kind of hard to quantify, obviously, and it's not something that occurs on day one. But yeah, it's almost like that exponential growth from this slight success and from being authentic, right? And growing a community. So yeah, I mean, to me, everything comes down to that, which is find, like you said before, find that problem, find the community that you can speak to, find a way to connect with them, and grow your tribe, grow those 1,000 true fans that turn into 10,000 or 100,000 true fans, right? And good things will happen. So I think that is the most important part of building a blog, building a podcast, making money online, is not doing it for the wrong reasons, but going into it, trying to help people, and good things will happen. That is probably my biggest takeaway from 10 years of failing forward into creating something successful.
All right, guys. So that is our thoughts. We may have missed something. You know, there are probably other ways to make money online. That was as comprehensive as I could come up with. If there are additional ways, you know, certainly this can be an ongoing journey. But I think most of the business models that I've seen, most of the legitimate business models that I've seen from bloggers and people that have seen success with their online business ventures, this is the a la carte menu that they're choosing from. And they're not necessarily choosing just one, but rather they're adding to their portfolio as they continue down this journey. I hope this was helpful for you as you try to figure out whether or not an online business venture is going to be something that's in your future. Certainly, it is interesting just to contemplate. And even if you decide not to go down this route, it's interesting to know how money is being made on the internet. I think it makes you a more aware consumer of information if you understand the underpinnings of what's going on online. So anyways, as we wrap this up, I can't help but just take 1 second and share this incredibly cool voicemail that we got from Fritz over at Retirement Manifesto. He is cruising in. I think he has something like 38 days left till his official last day at work. And then I think his plan is to hit the road and start collecting retirement stories and post FI stories from people all around the country. And this is one he sent our way that we knew we had to share with you.
Hey, this is Fritz Gilbert at the Retirement Manifesto. You're not going to believe what just happened to me. I stopped to take a picture of a barn. You'll see it on my blog. And a wonderful couple pulled up with a license plate on the front. I should take a video of this. It says, no mortgage, no boss, retired, no worries, no paycheck. Awesome, awesome couple. So anyway, we've struck up a great conversation. And I just asked him a question. I said, hey, do you mind if I turn on the recording for a minute? So the question I asked was, they've got 20 years of retirement experience, people. So these are great people who have lived for 20 years in retirement. And I just asked them the question that they haven't answered yet. If you could give one piece of advice to somebody who's 30 days away from retirement, what would it be? And here's their response. We'll start with the mister.
Well, it's real simple. Just remember that what you don't do today will still be there tomorrow.
There's no urgency anymore, right? I love that. Okay, and the missus.
I think to make sure that your time is well spent. Enjoy your retirement, but have a purpose. I try to do one thing every day, accomplish one goal every day.
Oh my gosh, that's excellent. That I write, you don't know anything about what I write, but I write about purpose. I write about, I'm publishing right now a schedule that my wife and I put together for every day of the week when I first retire. Activities we're going to do together, activities we're going to do apart. So that's amazing advice, because I'm really passionate about purpose. That's why I write. Writing is my purpose. Mm-hmm. And I'm helping people, and I love it. All right, we'll see y'all again. Fritz at the Retirement Manifesto, helping people achieve a great retirement.
Brad, I think this could be a thing.
Oh, I would love if Fritz just traveled across the country and just randomly recorded people. How neat would that be?
That'd be awesome. I think I'm more excited for Fritz's retirement than I am for my own at this point, just because of that enthusiasm.
Fritz is the single most enthusiastic person I've ever met in my entire life.
And you're saying that amazing to me on this call. Think of the context.
Yeah, I know. You're rather excitable, obviously. But yeah, I mean, he takes you to a whole nother level, right?
It's amazing. And Fritz, we are so excited for you and what this means. If you release the article ahead of this, you know, ahead of the show, I will make sure that we include it in the show notes for today's episode. But this idea of being excited about this path to FI and what are you going to do once you reach FI? I think it would be so criminal to get to FI and realize that you have no hopes, you have no dreams, you have no plans. And so you decide you're going to catch up on Netflix. That does not feel fulfilling at face value. And so I think all of us together can just start designing the future we want to live into in the present and for our future. All right, guys, unfortunately, that is going to bring this episode to a close. As you know, we like to finish every episode by doing a drawing for a copy of a book that we have found useful. There's three books that we have. The first one is J.L. Collins' book, The Simple Path to Wealth. The second is Dominic Cortuccio's book, Design Your Future. And the third is Vincent Puglisi's book, Freelance to Freedom. If you want to enter this drawing, all you need to do is just go to chooseify.com/iTunes, follow the written instructions there and leave us a review. And then send us an email to feedback@chooseify.com, letting us know that you left a review and what screen name you left it under. And then every week on the Friday roundup, we announce the winners and we give one book away for every 5 written reviews that we get. And Brad, how many winners do we have today?
All right, Jonathan, we have one winner today, and the winner is Jennifer. And she said, from fear to freedom. For years, I buried my head in the sand, not only avoiding financial topics, but actually feeling anxious about money matters. I made it my goal to learn more about finances at the start of 2018, and it seemed overwhelming at first. But I stumbled upon the Chooseify podcast, and with Jonathan and Brad's down-to-earth discussions, my anxiety slowly started to transform into curiosity and now excitement. Learning that the financial independence path is the opposite of a get-rich-quick scheme, but that it is actually a steady-as-she-goes approach made it both simple and accomplishable. I binge-listened episodes and am now hyped to learn about the nitty-gritty of finances, from fear and trepidation to freedom and excitement. Thank you, Jonathan and Brad, for building a community and for providing great content that empowers.
Thank you so much for leaving that review. That really is incredible. All right, guys, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.